I simplify everything and I create a process and automation and leverage everything that I can. So I'll create a process for everything and then I'll try to automate it, you know, like Callan Lake, like communication with you. You want to be on the podcast, send to Callan Lake. Everything's automated. And then whatever I can't automate, I'll stock, I'll have a VA team that I will leverage that out. So I call it PAL, processes, automations, and leveraging. And I exploit that. And that's kind of like what dictates my day and the dynamics of the Reader's Digest version of the vagueness of my day.
You're listening to The Isaac Velez Show, a podcast that inspires high performers to reach new heights and be better than their best. My name is Isaac, and I'm best known for my performance coaching, elevating elite athletes and entrepreneurs to unlock their full potential. On this podcast, I sit down and share vulnerable stories on my journey, lessons that I've learned, and I bring on high performers as guests to unlock new insights and share authentic conversations about what winning really looks like. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, everyone, to the Isaac Velez Show. This show is all about bringing the mavericks of the world, the rare breeds of thinkers and doers, onto the show to have high-level conversations about what it means to win. Not the nice, beautiful side that we all think about when we're kids, but the side that it takes to create the life that we want, the suffering that we have to go through, to be the men and women that we care about in terms of what we want our kids to think. It's not just about business, but the lives and the relationships that we leave, as well as the legacies that we decide to create with our own lives. This guest is someone that's part of the interview series where I'm bringing on high performers to talk about the different sides of personal development and professional development. Today's guest is going to be a great conversationalist, and I just want to have a great conversation so you guys can take away those insights that's going to help you build your relationships, build your businesses, and build a better and more fulfilling life. So without further ado, let me introduce Michael. Michael, welcome to the show.
Isaac, thank you. I love that intro. First of all, that moves your blood too, because when you're working for somebody else's legacy, I love that. Plus, you got that down really well. Is that memorized?
No, I just try to say the same thing roughly, but I like changing up a little bit.
It sounded organic. It sounded great. A little compliment for you there just to kick it off. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. So I do a podcast called Long Shot Leaders. I do a couple podcasts, but I consider myself a long shot. It ties into my entrepreneurial story. My grandmother escaped the Russian concentration camps. My dad was a New York homeless street kid. Became a multimillionaire only to become homeless again. So I had to sleep in the same room with my grandmother and hear how she escaped the Russian concentration camps. That was my bedtime story. So I was a premature, ADHD, ADD, dyslexia, a lot of health issues, and so a square peg. Really never had any success other than making people laugh. And then one day, like most American kids, I saw the movie Rocky, and that kind of changed my life. You know, I was like, here's a guy like me. You know, he's not successful. He's not smart. You know, I didn't consider myself smart. But he always came, got knocked down, kept going back up. And I kind of looked at myself like that. So then, but the difference between this guy and me is that he was physically fit. So every day since then, I started working out. And by the time I was 16, I became a fitness trainer. And I said, ooh, there's two things, I can, and then I did stand-up comedy, so I can make people laugh, that's success, and then became physically fit, that's success. Time plus effort, that's all it needs. So then when it came time to my tutor in high school to say, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be an entrepreneur, stand-up comedian, and actor. And she goes, not everybody's meant to do what they want to do. Maybe you want to work with your hands, And I said, well, screw you. My dad didn't even finish the eighth grade and became a multimillionaire. Granted, he became homeless again. But he kind of bottomed out and was successful a little bit. I'm going to have a high school diploma. So a week after I graduated high school, started a business, was successful for the first 2 hours. And then it was summertime. And I said, screw it. I can't do this. And I folded up the business because it wasn't for me. It was like phone sales in my bedroom. And then about 6 months later, I did stand-up comedy and I brought a lot of people in. And I was 19 and I said, well, I could do this with nightclubs because in Los Angeles, nightclubs were very big back then in the late 80s. So I became a nightclub promoter. And within 6 months, I became the number one nightclub promoter in my age bracket. Once again, time plus effort. That's all required. So from there, I was able to become an actor. My first acting role was playing Dirk Diggler in The Dirk Diggler Story, which became Boogie Nights, which I appear in as well. I made my own movies from there. Acted with Academy Award winner actors and produced, wrote and directed all these other films. When I started my business, though, I was broken in debt from spending all my money on film. I just did this big film and I was broke. And I wanted to make another film. But I said, screw it, man. I got to be an entrepreneur again. Like, I was a nightclub promoter. I got to be a, you know. So I did something on the internet selling tarps. I had no money. I just filed bankruptcy. And I, within 6 months, I made $500,000. And I said, well, great. Now I get to make a movie. I made a movie with, you know, Faye Dunaway, who's an Academy Award-winning actress. And I did really well with the film. It did okay at film festivals, but it didn't make all its money back. So I said, you know, I'm going to take care of this business. And since then, that the business has made well over $100 million. I'm opening up another business in 6 weeks called Bolator, which I'm wearing the hat right now. And that's going to be have a patented brand of products that's a backpack that opens up to a tarp, that's a hammock, that's a revolutionary kind of, like, you know, all these multifunctional things that a backpack can do. They're called Bolo Packs. And since then, I do a podcast also called Long Shot Leaders, because I said if I was going to do a podcast, I would do one where it shows people that were not successful, that had success, and then sustain that success. And that's why I guess I'm talking to you here today.
It's very interesting because I've recently explored the concept of early success and what it can do to people. Like, we think about modern day and how easy it is for people with the online world to make money. And you have the influencers, you have people that have the quick success. And that's often present a lot of problems because they don't know how to manage it. And so sometimes it's been, if you can develop the character before you develop the success, you can handle the success. But if you can't, you know, especially when we're talking about athletes have dealt with this for a long time, where they get all the success, but then they have no idea how to manage it. You know, I think about an author like Robert Greene, who was like 38 before he really had his first big break. He spent so much time working at different things that didn't really work out for him. But in turn, he was able to handle everything that came his way. And so what are your thoughts have been that, like, obviously in the moment, it might be a little more spiteful that we're like, oh, I wish I was here, but I'm not. But then looking back on it, you were like, well, I guess I was kind of where I was supposed to be.
Wow. That's a high consciousness level question and thinking about success, because that's the difference. That's when an old person, like, well, I'm a little older than you, so you look back and you're like, okay, yeah, you know, it's the mindset. So, you know, I think, you know, good head and good heart, you know, bueno cabeza and corazón is really important, because that's a foundation, because you can make a lot of bad decisions. My dad was a great guy, but he also made a lot of hasty, terrible, you know, reckless lifestyle decisions, which how you do one thing carries on to maybe other things. Take care of your body, take care of your mind. It all relates to business and how your mindset. And mindset was everything. So that's why I kind of quit that first business. I didn't see beyond the first steps. Like Martin Luther King said, you don't need to see the end of the staircase to take those first steps. So the mindset is when you have the core, if you work on your mind, you work on, you know, personal development. And that's what I started to do. Once I started to, you know, I've always been in personal development, even in a young age. But when I started to make money is when I really doubled down on being able to go to like every seminar Tony Robbins ever done, and really tapped into other people to really start to work on my mind, because that's one thing that will never go broke. I'll never go bankrupt with my brain, right? That'll always be there no matter what your business does. And that spills into over to the day-to-day nuts and bolts of the operation. You know, it has to do with step one when you're conceptualizing where you want to go, how you're going to do it, when you're going to do it, who you're going to do it with, how are you going to do it yourself? And all the details and the critical thinking that goes into that, it all has to do with mindset. So what would I do when I look back? I would say, first of all, I guess you're asking me, what would I do if I would look back and do it again? Is that part of the question?
That can be part of it. Go ahead.
Okay. One thing I would do is, like, little brother, slow down. And this is something called a spreadsheet. I know these don't look good to you because you got the ADHD. I'm going to tell you what that is. Like, I didn't find out I had ADHD until I was, like, older. I said, take the spreadsheet. All right. And here's where you think you want to go as far as whatever goal you want to do. All right. And write down all the action items that you think that you start to collect them and just build the spreadsheet. Don't, you know, do something immediately towards your goal, but fill out the spreadsheet and start to get all your ideas and concepts down on that. I know it's tedious, but take that time. Preparation is 95% of success, no matter what business, no matter what, you know, acting or whatever. That's a quote from a great acting teacher named Eric Morris. And then once you have that down, you start to look at the full scope, the who, what, where, why, when, and how of the situation. And that's what I would tell myself differently and take time with the preparation and the full scope of what your goal is, no matter what that goal is.
Yeah, no, there's two things that come to mind. You know, you think about like the classic Abe Lincoln quote that's like, you know, if I had 6 hours to cut a tree, I'd spend the first 4 sharpening the axe. But the second part, I even think about like old Italian films. you think about like a Scarface or even like The Godfather, where they really talked about like the guys in the business weren't the ones that, you know, wanted all the flash, or they were trying to be super rash and careless. They were the ones that, you know, were cautious and were intentional about the things that they did. It wasn't always about being the biggest fish in the sea. It was about staying alive for the most amount of time. And so I think, you know, there's been a concept by Patrick McDavid known as, you know, the four kind of O's, and it's like outwork, out-strategize, out-innovate. But the last one I feel a lot of people overlook nowadays because the short-term gratification has grown to a higher level, and that's outlasting. And so I think even in my life, you know, with me being at a younger age, my focus has always been the people I look up to. The more and more I grow older, the less people that I truly admire, because it's like when you admire someone's life, you admire everything. The struggles that they got, that it took them to get there, the sacrifices that they make now on the day-to-day basis. And I think a lot of people make a bad mistake of looking to people simply for what they have and not the process that it took them to get there. So like for me, I'm not going to look up to someone that isn't a father, that isn't a married person, because to me, that's very important, right? I respect Carnegie, but I look up to a Rockefeller. Why? Because Rockefeller was married one time to one person. And to me, that's important. Now to other people, it might not matter as much, but again, it's all about intentionality. And I feel that part of what you said there about slowing down, I think the lesson I've learned from other people is that it's not about moving fast or moving slow. It's more about moving correctly. And that always ties back to intentionality.
Man, you that was another great thing. You know, marriage, your backyard, you know, everything matters. Everything matters. You know, you think that, well, I'm really good at that. You know, you don't have to be great at everything, you know, but everything matters. Like, you know, there's that old, I forgot which general has that whole monologue on how to make your bed every day. Now, theoretically, make your bed every day. You know, he only got married once. Carnegie got married once. I didn't know that about him, but that's something to be, you know, said about that, because divorce is not just it tells you how you handle and manage everything else. It's also a waste of time. It's a waste of money. It's also, there's so many, you know, it's like HR in your business. Hiring and firing is not the way to go. You want to hire as little as you can. You want to hire a lot if you're scaling, but you don't want to fire a lot, because then you got to train somebody. You got to, you know, the HR process. It's a time suck. It's a money suck. So that has the same thing to do with marriage. It has to, you know, that methodology of, you know, hire slow and fire fast, you know? Yeah, you know, I think that it comes back to critical thinking and taking your time and really evaluating. And critical thinking is, it's not talked about enough in school, and at least in high school, and definitely not in business, because you can go to, all you need to do is start a business, a great business, is go to YouTube. YouTube University is better than Mays or Anderson or at UCLA or any of those schools. But the thing is that the mindset and the critical thinking aspect of, once you have the intellectual knowledge, you need to now make it physical knowledge and have a system and have it get, you know, learn how to go through the processes. And I think that's huge. Yeah.
I think it also comes down to, you know, it's always about, like, I always like the idea of reverse engineering. Like, where are you looking to go? Like, have an aim and then work backwards. Because I feel that a lot of people, you know, they don't think about the big picture. And I also think, you know, there's so much wisdom. And I think part of how, where I am today is contributed much to the fact that I have always tried to learn from the mistakes of others. Like, the reason I can gather this experience is only because I've leveraged experience of people that are much older than I am. And I've almost never found a person over the age of maybe 65, 70, who has told me, I wish I spent more time working on my business than working with or than spending time with my family. So it's like, if that is the common trend, why am I going to go on the same path, right? And so it's like, it's applying such a reasonable based logic of like, yeah, I love working in business, but if I'm not putting attention on my life, what am I doing? Because if I end up like them, that's not where I want to go. And I've always believed that, you know, every decision we make has opportunity cost. Everything has to do that. That's why it has meaning. If we didn't have time, things wouldn't have meaning, because we would have infinite time. But regrets are actively choosing things that aren't in our best interest. And sometimes we don't know that. So sometimes we got to figure out ways to learn that about ourselves, or have people that can hold us accountable to those standards.
Absolutely. That's a mic drop moment right there. That's true. I mean, because, you know, there's times in your life, you have seasons in your life where you're going to be able to dedicate a certain amount of time towards, you know, when you're single, and that's when you really double down on that time. You know, you invest so much, but then, and then you prepare for that. And you kind of play, you know, the way when you said you know your ending, that's how most of the best movies are written, you know, is the new equilibrium of the character at the end of the movie. And then you write backwards, you know, with the bones of the structure in mind. And then you get to the dialogue, right? And it's kind of like business can be done as said in the same thing. And that is, know what's your end point, your end game, what you're really, you know, what you're going for. And then realize that, you know, you have to prioritize in certain sections, and like, you know, like a funnel, like a pyramid, so to speak, of like, you know, where your priorities are as far as, you know, take care of your body, take care of your mind. And that's number one, really. That's loving yourself. And because, you know, if you're not healthy, or if you're not, you know, intelligent enough to handle certain things, it's just that step one. And two, then, you know, your family life and those guys. There's a great book called The Millionaire Mind. It was, I think it was written in the early 90s. And it talks about self-made millionaires and all of the algorithm of what they, you know, the things that they, you know, the bullet points of what they did. And they were, you know, single marriage, you know, like one marriage, you know, they had a good, strong, you know, significant other. They didn't have a lot of flash. They had this, they bought the best of things, like a really great expensive pair of shoes, but like, you know, ones that could be last like a lifetime, you know, and a great suit, the one that could last a lifetime, you know. They're very practical. They were very, you know, they were playing, you know, the long game like an athlete would, right? As to where, you know, Michael Jordan or Kobe, those guys, you know, they're out there doing the nuts and bolts of the sport, you know, which is not flashy, but they're showing up an hour early. They're staying an hour late. They're practicing. They're doing the basics, John Wooden, the basics. And that's what shows up when it looks like all that flash, when you're kicking ass and you look great. That's because you did the basics. I think that answers your question as far as what we were talking about there.
So obviously we talk about reverse engineering, and we kind of bring it down. Like, I call it the horizons. It's a method that I found that it's like, you know, you go to like the farthest horizons of like, you know, the way I've broken mine down is like, I have the purpose horizon. I have the, you know, the areas of focus, which I call like the four F's of fulfillment. So like family, fitnesses, that includes mental as well, finances and family. And then I have, you know, closer to that, it's like, okay, what are my goals right now? Like, what am I aiming for? And so I have, you know, time limits of 4 days, 4 weeks, 4 months, and 4 years. And then I have like overarching visions of like 0 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60, and then 60 to 80. And then that breaks down into like the day to day, like what am I doing day to day? And so I'm curious, like, you know, like if you're looking at your typical workday, like what are you doing? What are you spending most of your time on at your current moment? And as well as like, you know, personal wise.
Yeah. Great questions. I ask the same shit. I wake up, fairly early. I go straight to work, you know, that's my play. Work is play. And, I will bucket things. I will do my communications first. You know, first I look at my calendar, just get refreshed. What do I got planned on today? You know, and then I will then, you know, start to the communications after that. Make sure that those are executed. You know, any hot potatoes, get those out of the way. Then we'll look at the business. We'll look at the numbers. We'll look at ad spend tracking, you know, because that's, no matter how big your business, again, I want to see that's always going to be that. And fulfillment, you know, costs, you know, because I sell a widget, you know, that's always going to be, you know, your fulfillment costs is you got the best rate you can. Really don't monitor that, but your ad spend tracking, you want to know what your sales factors are. You know, make sure that's healthy in the past 24 hours. Because I run an online, you know, based business. We have a facility, you know, fulfillment facility, but you know, we advertise heavily on, you know, online. So once that's done, you know, communications with the team. You know, after I get a scope of understanding, and then. I'll just work on all aspects of, you know, that we're working on at that time. You know, like right now it's Bolitor. All roads lead to Bolitor for us. So we're doing a heavy amount of work, making sure the other business is running smooth, tarshplus.com, which is my other business. So, you know, you're kind of just going through all of, you know, we have a spreadsheet of, you know, we'll have daily meetings of how we're doing on these, you know, projects. You know, so I just talk about my project manager, the assistant project manager, and we'll go over those things and kind of make sure that we're on track and our communications to the factories and product development, and everything else is going smooth. During the week after work, I work out. That's when I work out during the weekdays. The weekends, like today, before I logged on to you, you know, I on Saturdays, I like to do P90X, and then I'll do a different workout on Sunday. So I'll work out earlier on the weekends. And then, of course, as soon as that's done, spending family time. And sometimes, you know, you got to pivot. You know, the family says, hey, we have a situation. Family is number one to me. You know, number one is, I always tell my kids, take care of your body, take care of your mind. What after I take it, you know, because working out and eating right is a priority of mine, because I got to take care of myself for them. But then family. So everything drops for family, you know. But once that's situated, you know, and my two girls got good heads on their shoulders and there's not much volatility there, you know, my days are pretty much regimented and I keep them very organized and very simplistic and bucketed because I got the ADHD and I simplify everything and I create a process and automation and leverage everything that I can. So I'll create a process for everything. And then I'll try to automate it, you know, like Callan Lake, like communication with you. You want to be on the podcast, send to Callan Lake. Everything's automated. And then whatever I can't automate, I'll have a VA team that I will leverage that out. So I call it PAL, processes, automations, and leveraging. And I exploit that. And that's kind of like what dictates my day and the dynamics of the Reader's Digest version of the vagueness of my day.
So what was your process to learning how to delegate like? Did you ever struggle with it? Or like as soon as you could, you kind of understood that you needed to delegate things?
Two sets forward, one step back. I mean, that was like, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it took a while, you know. I mean, I was a wild kid. I was very impulsive. You know, I made more bad decisions than I had decisions. You know, it was out of control, you know. And I didn't, but I could do a lot of things. When I was a nightclub promoter, people were marveled at how fast I grew and how much I could do at one time. You know, I was 21 years old working with Warner Brothers and doing, you know, promotion movies for Batman and all, you know, and all these other events. And I could handle a lot at one time. A lot of ADHDers can do that. But the thing is there's a lot of mess, a lot of craziness going on, a lot of collateral damage. But I'm like, look how much I could do at once. I could do like 15 things at once because I'm hyper as hell. But that creates a lot of damage and a lot of loss, you know, whether you don't pay for your insurance on a brand new Escalade and that gets stolen, you know, because you were a week late on paying after you bought it, all kinds of mistakes. So that's why preparation, once somebody told me about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I got better by white knuckling it, you know, by trial and error. But once somebody said, you know, I think you have ADHD, which I didn't pay heed to it, because I don't want to, like, you know, but I looked it up and I said, well, if I do have this and I don't want to make myself believe something from a personal development standpoint, I then said, well, let me identify the issues that they say that these people have. And I like checked every box on this freaking ADHD thing, right? You know, so then I was like, okay, so how can you do this holistically? Because I don't like taking medication if I don't have to for anything. You know, if I'm dying on a hospital room, I'll take some medication. But so then it created processes. And, you know, I turn off my phone. I keep it on silent. I don't have the red dots on my thing. I clean up my emails. I make sure everything is simplified. And that's when I came up with PAL, processes, automation, leveraging, and simplification and scheduling it out. It doesn't sound sexy, but for me, I'm able to accomplish more and be more successful and have much less issues and being a better business person, father, everything by simplifying regimentation and creating processes, automations, and leveraging. And that process took in stages. But once I, somebody really said, hey, look, you're this person. And, you know, then I doubled down, kind of like when I made $1 million in one day. And what am I going to do with this? And I, you know, as when I first started my business, like the first 2 years into it, and I doubled down on personal development, which I've always done. So the process has been two steps forward, one step back. But I'd say, about 10 years ago, really hit some big strides. And about 7 years ago, really hit into overdrive.
I love it. So to kind of conclude today's episode, why don't we share, you know, a piece of advice or insight that you would have for, let's say, a 25-year-old. He got married a couple months ago, has his own business, and, you know, he wants to live a good life. He wants to be, you know, eventually a good father. You know, what's one thing you would say to him in order to kind of help him on his journey?
Okay. Well, be the best you could be for yourself and others, you know, that you're going to start this family, you're going to start to do. You know, I would tell them, so what I tell my girls, take care of your body and take care of your mind. You know, it sounds so trite and cliche, but you know what? Do that in that order, you know, health and then, you know, expand your mind. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you know, or anything, you know, work on, you know, personal development, critical thinking, understand, you know, human psychology. Then, if you're starting a business, was that part of the scenario? He's starting a business.
He's been running a business. He's had a little bit of success, but he's, you know, it's up and down.
Is this you, Isaac?
No.
No. Okay. Good. All right.
Found it funny though. What a good way to say it.
Okay. So, you know, I would do what we already talked about. I would do scope, you know, prepare and really strategize and then spreadsheet it out. Spreadsheets are, though, you know, they're not, a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs are scared by those. It's just really just, it helps you just kind of eye shot it. You don't have to look at it every day, or you could, but just, you know, put all of your thoughts and your ideas and strategies on a spreadsheet, you know, and kind of like use that as a compartmentalizer, you know, and then get scope of the situation. Now, a Tony Robbins thing is when you want to take action on something, immediate action. When you have a goal, take immediate action on that goal. It doesn't have to be like, you know, you'd have to drop everything, but like, you know, say if you have a material goal, I want to buy a Mercedes, you know, the $150,000 vehicle. Well, then go get the brochure and download it online, you know, and then pin it up. You know, it's step number one, you know, immediately, you know, and do put things in motion, because your brain will try to avoid cognitive dissonance because you're planning in this direction. And then mind your internal and external dialogue. Your triad of your emotions are going to control yourself pretty heavily. So that the triad of emotions are what you focus on, your vocabulary, and your physiology. So when you talk about your goals and you talk about the direction you want to go in, make sure that you have empowering dialogue internally and the externally, what you're saying to other people. Make sure that it's, you know, empowering towards the direction you want to go in. Your physicality, you know, make sure that you're not, you know, you're not shallow breathing, your head's down. When you talk about your goals, keep your chin up, deep breathing, get your body into it. You know, make sure your body is congruent with your vision, with your dialogue and your vision. Visualize where you want to go, you know, and think about the picture, sounds, and feelings that are going into that situation. Make it real, because once it becomes real, your mind will have a hard time trying to avoid cost of dissonance meeting that goal. So all that sounds kind of like, you know, a little complicated and far-fetched, but it's not, it's really simple, you know, and just take every day, step by step. Don't worry about failure, because that means you're growing, because you're trying something. And put in those reps as much as you can, you know, like stand-up comedians, you know, if you bomb on set, see if there's another place you can go to that night, another location that you could do another set, to where maybe you can get rid of that bomb taste out of your, you know. It's the same thing with business, you know. So try to get right back in there immediately, and because it's just a numbers game, and you will learn better, you know, by trying to get in as most reps as you can in the shortest amount of time.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate your time. Everyone, the links to what he's doing, his podcast and stuff like that, and his business will be down in the show notes below. Just closing off the episode with a quote from Ernest Hemingway. There is no nobility in being superior to your former man, but true nobility lies in being superior to one's former self. You know how we close it out here. Veni, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered.
Nice.
'That concludes today's episode of The Isaac Velez Show. If you gained any value from today, we'd be grateful if you share the episode and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you were looking to get more involved with us, visit our website, www.isaacantoniovelez.com, and follow us on Instagram for daily content. See you in the next episode.